My name is Melissa Maxwell Doherty. I'm from Grand Forks, North Dakota. The title of this session is Opening the Table, Listening and Responding to Children. And I am using as a resource How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and How to Listen So Kids Will Talk, a book and a workshop by Adele Faber and Elaine Malish. There was a study in 1987 by the National Center for Self-Esteem that asked young people how they felt about themselves, how good they felt about themselves, where their self-esteem was. At kindergarten, 70% of kindergartners felt that way. Third grade, only 40%. Fifth grade, only 20%. In ninth grade, 15% felt good about themselves. And by the time they were seniors in high school, only 8% said they felt good about themselves. This is a startling figure to me. Put this up against another study that measured the top interests of youth, and they are defining kids are a little bit older in this sixth grade and above. 67%, their top interest was knowing how to make friends and how to be a friend. Look at this one. 62% said their top interest was to like myself more. You put this with this, and this is a scary statistic. And this one, 50% said they wanted to know how to talk better with mom and dad. Those are some startling facts. They tell me about the importance of listening to our children and responding to them. In addition to these two studies, put into the mix how God looks at us. We know that God looks upon each child as a person of infinite worth, you know, self-esteem really high, sees themselves as saint and sinner simultaneously. So here you are, a person of infinite worth, and by the time we have seniors in high school, only 8% of us feel like we have a good sense of self-worth. This is a scary statistic. I don't know where Susan Brill and I were exactly in seminary or what we were doing, but I will never forget something she said in a room where I was. And I think it may have been when we were going through the final certification process, the USDA stamp of approval that you could be a pastor. I think that's where we may have been. And she said that the gospel, Jesus Christ, death and resurrection, the story of life, of his life, said to her that she was free to love. I got that. And free to fail. And the bells went off for me when she said that. Free to love and free to fail. That she could screw up her life big time, and God, she was still within the embrace of God's loving arms. Well, that's the kind of message I'd like to share with my kids, that it's okay if they mess up. Of course, I don't want them to, and especially certain ways I really don't want them to, but it's okay. And I want them to be able to talk as they are able to me, and I want them to feel like they have good worth and feel strong about themselves so that, that when they go out into the world, they can stand tall as opposed to standing hunched over. In our time together this week, we'll have some time as a large group. We'll do some things in twos and threes. We've got some great cartoons from this book, and we'll show them on the overhead. We'll be practicing some things with each other, and we'll use it kind of as a learning session for all of us. And again, please do not assume that I'm the expert, or you will. I'm just trying these out, they've worked. The first time I read this book was about 3 years ago, and a couple of techniques that are just part of me now. And the challenge for me now in going through this past 6 months is to try to work again at some other skills, to learn new skills to help in my talking and responding to my own kids. What I'd like you to do now, do you have pencils or writing? Some of you have writing. Some of you may not. And if you want to, you can write write some things down, and you don't have to. I'll live by grace here. But visualize your child as an adult. So let's think of them as maybe 26, 27, 30, 35. Would you write down 5 adjectives that your child...
What about more than one child?
Can you just kind of... Well, that's a good question. I was going to say but they're totally different kids.
Yeah.
It may help to pick one child. That's enough. Yeah, because you couldn't collapse them. Well, and we're going to get to both of those things exactly. 5 adjectives that one of your children would use to describe their childhood relationship to you. Now, this is real hard. We're kind of putting ourselves into their feet and saying, how would, like if I'm picturing Kyle, my 9-year-old, what adjectives would he use to describe our childhood relationship? And I think he would, I would hope that, and I think he would say that stress. I tend to be compulsive. The other day, my husband and I are out in the Ark, and we're sitting down, and the kids are playing, and they're content, and we're just talking. And 5 minutes, I said, let's go to the library and get books. He said, you don't want to sit with me? I said, well, I want to sit with you and read with you. Well, why don't we just sit? Could you just sit? And I tend to be more, you know, is it Mary or Martha? Well, I'm whichever one is busy and griping about my sister who's not helping in the kitchen. I mean, that's me. So Kyle would probably say something about that. I think he would also talk about the gift of humor. We do a lot of laughing in our family. So he may describe humorous, that we laughed a lot. Mom was a target of laughter, and he was a target of our laughter. I mean, it goes both ways. But 5 adjectives that one of your child would describe their childhood relationship with you. And I'll tell you in advance that I'll get you in twos with someone you don't know so well, and so you will not, if there's something in there that's really private, you do not, of course, have to share. I'll ask you to share at your own comfort level. Okay? So 5 adjectives. Then if you want to go a couple steps further, is there an adjective that you wish was on the list that isn't on the list? No, yeah, there are a couple that you'd really hope and pray that your child would say, but you kind of don't think they would.
What was that?
If there are any adjectives that describe what you would want them to say to describe your childhood relationship with them, and maybe they wouldn't say that, but things that would be really important to you that they would say.
1 or 5.
You can pick 1, 2.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a reaction.
I forgot.
Oh, you forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
well,
okay.
I found that a lot of the things that we came up with was similar to what she came up with her own kids in terms of how they describe their relationship with us. Mm-hmm. I found that interesting that we come from different parts of the world and yet we...
There are similarities.
Similarities. Like, yeah. Our kids would describe us as being demanding.
And then the difference between being listened to and being understood.
Yeah.
That came up. And did some others?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have stuff of when does teenagehood begin? Did anybody move into that?
Yeah,
we're growing now. As you think about those lists that you made, are there specific parenting skills that you think work in terms of building that healthy relationship? Are there things that you've found build a good relationship?
Well, I've had an open dialogue. I really, really worked hard with open dialogue with my 2 sons, especially with the first one, trying to toward my way of being a parent, and my feeling was that if I would just always try to listen and not judge right off and not yell right off, that he would talk to me. And we have a really good, in fact, for Mother's Day this year, he's just going to be a sixth grader. He was a fifth grader. He talked about in his little essay that they had to write at school for Mom was that how she always listens to me and understands when I didn't mean to do something. And I thought, all right.
Great. Suspending judgment. That's really hard for me, but that's very good. Yeah.
I felt that being loving and affectionate and giving that security is really important.
Okay. That touch leads to them feeling secure. Mm-hmm. Good, good, good.
Even when they don't want to hug you anymore. 13-year-old, don't touch me. Yeah. Touch me in the mall.
With our kids, certain places we've learned that we can't touch them anymore. Mm-hmm. But then other times we really can, so you have to look forward to those years. Do you know the book, I Love You Forever?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's wonderful.
Isn't that great? Yeah, she picks him up and runs. Right. Any other things that you have found?
I think one of the things that really gets me closeness with my kids is doing a project together, mm-hmm. especially if it's helping other people. It really gives a bond or common sharing that you're doing together.
We have a pastor friend who, one of their Christmas rituals happens, maybe Susan you would know, is December 6th, is that a special day?
St. Nicholas.
St. Nicholas, okay. This is they've done ever since their kids were really little. They'd wake them up in the middle of the night. They would send letters to people, say, put your boots out. Your shoes out at your door, St. Nicholas, something is coming. And they would that afternoon put together fruit and nuts and granola, and then they would go around the middle of the night and put these little things in their shoes. But, a project that helps other people, and it's service-oriented, and how that's become such a part of their life.
I wouldn't want nuts to smell like my shoes.
Please pick them up early in the morning. James chapter 1, 19 says, be swift to hear, slow to speak. Swift to hear, slow to speak. I've always thought there was wisdom that God gave us two ears and one mouth. And generally, I think my kids would say she has two mouths and one ear, but listening is so important to any relationship. But on the outside, when you're really listening to someone, it looks so passive. It looks like you're brain dead. You're not doing it on anything. But on the inside, it's a very active process. And so we want to talk about various active listening skills. Think of Jesus. Can you think of Jesus, any stories from Jesus' life where he'd say he's a good listener? Can you think of any? Where maybe he suspended judgment and there was an open dialogue? Any stories from the gospel?
I think of the healing of the centurion's slave, that these emissaries come out to Jesus and say that the centurion's slave is sick, and he listens to that even though it comes from a direction that you wouldn't expect. And then when the centurion sends another message saying, don't even come to the house, just say the word and my servant will be healed, how Jesus hears that, even though it's a strange word and a foreign word, and it takes him by surprise, and then his response is, I haven't seen faith like this before. That sense of hearing something new in a place and from people, you wouldn't expect to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Matthew records the story of the Canaanite woman, and he listens to her, and, she... says, even the dogs get the crumbs from the table. I mean, she's this feisty woman and enters this dialogue. Or Nicodemus comes at the thief, like a thief in the night, and he listens. And Jesus, I suspect, was a great listener. And the woman at the well.
Oh, yeah.
The woman at the well. Samaritan woman.
And in that story, he even hears deeper than her words.
Hears deeper than her words, yeah.
Hears below what she says to something else.
You bet. So there's wisdom there, and that's something that we want to use with our children in our relationship. In the 1980s, there was a woman in Danville, California, that had a booming business. For $2, you could call her, and she would listen to you. I don't know if that's still happening, but that's amazing. In the 1980s, before, you know, these 900 numbers, that all the person would do is listen to you. Okay. A booming, thriving business in Danville, California.
No advice from her?
No, she just listened. And most of the time, when you tell someone a story, do you want advice? Really? Do you? You ask for it, but do you want it? Nah. Yeah, right?
And do you want it from your kids?
No.
That's right.
She just listened, you know. There's something to that. Booming business. Okay. I want you now to go back into your pairs. Okay? And imagine your childhood tape in your family of origin. And you can place yourself there, 5, 6, 11, 12, whatever. When I think of my table, the table is no longer there, but it was this Formica thing, white. And Kathy was here, Melinda, my dad, my mom's was by the kitchen, and me. And then when Grandma Cotton came to live, then I scooted in, and then Grandma Cotton was there. And I can remember every time we spilled milk and how I felt. I could hardly talk. You know, my tonsils would like swell. And I was holding back tears because we never cried at my family table. Now, I don't know why. We cried other places, but we didn't cry there. We do a lot of talking. In Lent, we'd have family devotions. Didn't seem to have them very much the other times, but we little visits with God would come out during Lent. And there we all were. We're all 3 years apart, and the kids and I. And think back to that family table. And then we've got some questions here that will help your conversation. And you may not get through all of them. You know, everybody takes a little bit different. Can you all see this? Where did you sit at the table? What was the conversation like? Who was the warm person for you at the table? Who is your connection? Boy, this isn't big enough. Okay, you may have to get up and move to see. When did you receive praise at the table? And for what were you affirmed? How were problems dealt with at the table? I don't know if we did a lot of that, except I do remember when the Watts riots came, somebody was coming into our neighborhood and was abusing children, and my dad put that paper out and said, if you ever see this man, you run, you say, he is not my father, and you scream and you run. And I don't think I had fear, a lot of fears until that point, but boy, at that point, I didn't even like to go outside at night, because I remember on that table, this guy, bad news. What happened? What told you that you were being listened to? Now that kind of assumes you were being listened to there, I know that. But the times when you were listened to, how did you know? And the times that you weren't listened to, what happened that told you that you weren't listened to? And at some point, if we're not at that point, I may say, get to those two questions. And then lastly, in what way has your childhood table affected the person you are today? What impact does it have?
Go back to our spouses.
Go back. One in my family, I don't know if this is, but somebody would butt in. You'd be talking and they'd plop right in there. And then I knew they'd checked out.
Yeah. My overwhelming feeling of remembering back is that when I was speaking of something that was important to me, they seemed to always pick up on that, and I always had good eye contact. And
that's over here.
I don't really remember not having, at least not listening to where it's an overriding feeling. And I'm sure there were times when we were in a hurry or something, but...
You remember your childhood table over here, and they looked you in the eye.
Mm-hmm. And responded in a manner that I felt they heard what I said.
They heard.
May not agree with it, but they heard it.
But they heard it. Yeah, that's most important. Was painful stuff open at your table? When you were preaching, I thought of those tears, and I was thinking about, you know, what we're going to talk about today, and... And I remember one sister had, somebody had exposed themselves to her in the alleyway, and everybody was excused from the table, and my parents just talked to my one sister, that I was not welcome in that conversation. I don't know if that was right or wrong. What it translated to me, for better or worse, was that painful stuff, we don't really deal with as a family.
Our childhood table, I remember being more, it was a group event, and I was listened to when the conversation involved everybody. I was just saying, a meal hardly went by when we didn't either get the dictionary out or the world book. Someone would say they learned something in school, well, let's look that up, and suddenly it's a whole six people talking about something. So when we were all learning something, I knew I wasn't being listened to when mom and dad started having a conversation about, my dad is a pastor, about the church. Then I knew that we were neither to really be listening nor to be talking. So when work invaded the dinner table, I knew it was done. And then they would have every night, my parents would have what they called their quiet cup of coffee. And the children would be dismissed from the table, which was always lively and devotions and singing and usually a dictionary or what's the Latin root of this and something. And then we'd be excused and mom and dad would have this talk alone. And I don't know if it felt like I wasn't listened to, but I learned from that there were some, it was important for my parents to have time alone at that table. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And B, that there were some things that really didn't involve us. There were conversations to which we weren't privy, so we left the room.
Where do I place that?
In a way, I think it was being listened to because they reserved those, mostly they reserved those one-on-one things after we were excused. And that only became bothersome when I was quite a bit older and I thought, what could they have to talk about that? They all are talking 16, 17, 18, coming home from college, mm-hmm. Discussing the Vietnam War, I mean, all that sort of stuff. But I think I learned something important about the table, that there were times when it was open to the whole family.
And there were times
when mom and dad had their quiet cup of coffee and we were just dismissed. Mm-hmm. But it was when that work stuff came into dinner that we were supposed to go invisible. Or the phone would ring.
I remember.
And the phone was right by the table, and my dad would be having his My mom would say, don't listen. So he'd hang up, and we'd go, who was it? And he'd always say, well, it was either Johnny Carson looking for new material, the Pope called him, President Johnson called him, looking for advice, so you would always have some phone in it. It was right mid one phone, and it was right by the table. And when that phone rang, it just felt like it's over. The family table is over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank heavens for call screening now.
Yeah. But they never thought to not answer the phone.
Great. Good for you. You know, I think that takes a lot of courage to turn the TV off, to not answer the phone, and it really is okay. When we were pastors in Arizona, we would come home and, you know, be 10 to 14 phone calls on the answering machine, and I hated that thing. I hated it because I had to come home and work. Mm-hmm. And we got to North Dakota, and the other pastor we worked with didn't have his answering machine connected. So we said, we're not. And we still have it. Now, he since has because he has kids away at college. But we miss all kinds of phone calls, and frankly, I'm glad for it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Do you answer the phone when it rings?
If it's right at dinner time and we're eating, then we won't. And then at that point we like miss one shot, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and we pick it up. Or if they call right back, right again, then we figure that's an emergency. But we're also not the solo pastors. There are four of us. One of us is usually reachable.
I read somewhere recently that this family table thing we all take for granted. 40 to 50% of all families in America don't have that anymore. It's sitting around the television set.
Yeah. Yeah. That's You know, that's a very big thing. And we have young children. Parents of teenagers tell me that they want to have family table, especially dinner time. It is just too hard with, in our community, hockey and soccer. And some families have gone to breakfast as their meal time. Well, I don't even believe in God hardly at breakfast. I mean, that would not work for me. I'm just tired, I'm dead. I'm much better. But I may have to adjust when our kids get to teenagers, because lunchtime, you can't do that. Okay, I bet through the week we can add on certain things here. Because these things, you know, it helps you if you remember. I know I was telling this couple over here that I am a really good parent when I am rested and my house is clean and I'm not under stress. And I'm a better lover. I'm a great, really. I need to be a wife. And I'm not, in daily life, I'm a terrible parent. Now, the stress, boom, I go back to, we just come off vacation, a week with my parents and a week with Scott's parents, and we've had more conversations about how we are growing up to be like our parents. And trying to reclaim the beauty of it, but like Scott, I shouldn't tell on him, but like he'll say to Nathan's at the table, and Nathan can't sit at the table. He has to, like, move. And he does the chair rocking back and just pushes Scott's button. And so last week he says, do you know what you're going to do? You're going to fall. We're going to take you to the first room. You're going to hold your head. And we just, it's like, Dorothy? What, you know, that's his mom. What is this? I mean, we started laughing about this. Because under stress, he went right back to the lecture he got when he did it. Okay, helpful hints for listening. And we're going to get much more specific modeling from great cartoons from these people. But these are all obvious, and we all know them. We all know them. We just don't get them in our crop. Listening with undivided attention without interrupting. That's really hard, especially for my children. This is a very good tool for kids. Remember what has been said. And it's hard to do. And if Kyle is really on a talkative thing, what I have to do is I count. You know, okay, A, B, C. What are the things he went through? And I try to count the things, and it helps me remember. He said three really important things here, and I try to go back to it. Listen to the baseline. What is not openly that's said, but possibly being felt. You know, like in a music, the first time you hear music, you often hear the melody, and the next time you hear it, or like you go to Lion King or Aladdin, and the first time you get some of it, and then you listen to it again, and you get all the other stuff. Same thing. What do you think is being felt underneath it all? Last night, Kyle, just in as I'm putting him to bed, he says, why do we have to come to Holden Village anyway? You know, this is day one. And so, you know, parent, I say, we were asked to teach classes and we're here. You know, I answer the question, this was the wrong thing to do. And so I said, what do you think we're here for? Meet new friends. I'm going to go to Narnia. Wait, what do you think about going to Narnia? Nervous. This is what that was. This was the first day of school. You know? And I, of course, missed it. Round one. Had to go back, listen again. Watch for the nonverbal clues. We all know that. This is another good one. I think listen to yourself. How might you feel in this situation as a way to further understand it? With the big but here. And the big but is don't share what you feel. Just do it to yourself. Put yourself, how might I feel in this situation, but don't share. I mean, you don't want to hear, when I was your age, Kyle, you know. They really don't care.
Classic example of this was a woman who took her kids to the sales. She loved going to sales at the department store.
Oh, yes.
The kid was terrified. The kid hated it. She kept dragging this poor kid. Finally, she got to thinking she had to see what was going on. So she went to the same sale, got on her knees at the kid's height, and there's this morass of legs flying everywhere, and kneecaps. It was terrifying. No wonder she just had to get the kids' perspective.
You bet. Great story. Thanks for sharing that. Remember that, you know, put yourself 3 feet tall. tolerate pauses and silence that are longer than usual. There are some studies about how long teachers, educators, pastors, and confirmation, you ask a question, and the average person cannot wait longer than 7 seconds before they fill in the gap. And so these people were training teachers to wait longer. And they found that some, you know, again, some kids were, you know, like not mine, but other kids would quickly raise their hand and answer. But some kids take longer to process what they want to say. And if an educator would simply wait, you know, they, more kids would speak. Now, that's something for us to remember and teach. This, of course, this is great for me because this is what I don't do. Help yourself and others feel comfortable and relaxed. Be calm. You know, if somebody's going to panic and escalate, it's me. That's what I do. At one point, Kyle was told a terrible burden and something that happened out behind trees. And of course, when he told me that, you can imagine what I'm thinking. And, you know, I just had to breathe, and finally get to it, and it was okay. But to remember to be calm. Again, this is one that I wish I said. I was a classic example, as you see me around here with my kids, but I am anything but calm. Tomorrow, what we're going to be doing is moving into hearing and acknowledging their feelings, and then on Thursday, we're going to do how to increase cooperation with your